This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham. I have Scott German with me. We're going to talk some UVA athletics. We're going to start with basketball. We'll talk football as we get towards the end here with big games in both. Virginia, of course, in basketball last night, we saw the Cavs take on an Austin Peay team. You know, Austin Peay is not a world beater, but a Virginia performance. Actually, Scott, you know, we were talking about this when we were on Press Row last night. You know, 93 points in a 93-49 win. Where does that rank in Virginia history under Tony Bennett? It was actually the most points Virginia's ever scored under Tony Bennett. So we did see something different last night, a Virginia team that went up and down the floor and scored. Your first impressions of what we saw last night?
The same type of impressions we often get with Virginia basketball. A very efficient offensive basketball team. You know, and a lot of times it doesn't translate to 93 points. It still translates to being very efficient. But last night, the very efficient team also had a lot of possessions and they capitalized on them and it turned out to be 93 points. Now, you're right. They're not going to play, a lot of different competition than what they faced last night, starting Friday in Richmond. But, you know, you have to be impressed because a lot of players contributed. They didn't have a lot of turnovers, shot lights out. And, you know, it's a good situation for – it's one of these situations you kind of hope you're in that you got to figure out how to get playing time for 10 or 11 players. So that's all you could have asked for in this game.
The first player I'll talk about is the one that got the loudest applause when he checked in the game last night. Jay Huff, who did not play in the win over UNC Greensboro. Tony Bennett saying afterwards that he was concerned about Huff's ability to keep up with the bigs on defense of UNC Greensboro. Last night gets in the game around the 13-minute mark. First possession, drains a three-pointer, makes his first six shots from the field, goes 7 of 8 overall, 2 3-pointers. He had one 19-foot jumper, whatever you would call it, with his foot on the line of the three-point line. So the kid obviously is as advertised. He can put the ball in the basket. You know, again, we're talking about Austin Peay. He looked good defensively. He had 5 block shots. So Jay Huff, as advertised, we didn't see him the first night. We didn't see him against Greensboro. But last night, wow, it was the Jay Huff show for long stretches last night.
Very impressive. And Chris, I want to date myself considerably. But I heard some rumblings afterwards. Oh, it was against a very subpar team. You can't really get a real indication of how well he played or how well he's going to play because of the competition that he faced last night. But I'm going to date myself a little bit and tell you the last time that I witnessed in person a player of his magnitude make his debut with UVA, and I say his magnitude of a caliber recruit, was almost 40 years ago. He went on to have a pretty good career at UVA, 3-time National Player of the Year. I think we know who I'm talking about. So I saw Ralph in his debut, and it also came against a very subpar team, even more so than Austin Peay, or P. I'm not sure how you pronounce that yet. It was against Johns Hopkins. And Ralph had a good night, didn't have the night that Jay had last night, but, I mean, He did it all. He went outside. He looked very comfortable near the 3-point line or behind the 3-point line. Looked good inside. I was impressed with his defense. He's going to get a lot more stern test than what he faced last night. But I don't think you could have asked for a lot more than what he came out with and gave us last night. I like his touch, just a flip of his wrist. He's shooting at a different angle, being over 7 foot, so that's going to take a little bit to get used to, but I think he's going to be a solid contributor. It's going to be interesting to see how Tony works him and Jack Salt into and out of the games because it's obvious they're not both going to be on the floor at the same time.
Yeah, we did see Huff play a lot last night alongside Mamadi Diakite. and they were practicing their post-to-post doubles. That's a feature, a staple of the pack line defense, that post-to-post double. When a ball gets passed in a post, a lot of teams will actually double with a guard. They'll have the one post guy who's guarding the post guy who gets the pass in the post from the backside, and then the guard will crunch down from the perimeter, and that's your double team. Well, what Virginia does is they'll actually send the other post guy across the lane, and they'll both double team that post guy to try to really just get the ball out of the hands of the post offensive player. For years, we've done this with 6-7 guys, 6-8 guys. Last night, there were a couple of those post-to-post double teams with a 7-1 Jay Huff and a 6-10 Mamadi Diakite. It's a different dimension for the Virginia defense, certainly. I'll talk about Kyle Guy next. I think Kyle Guy really has stood out to me the first two games. McDonald's All-American from a couple of years ago. Freshman season had some great highlights, also some games where he didn't hardly get off the bench. 7.5 points per game, but a big thing for me was, and I even talked with Kyle about this before the season started at Media Day a few weeks ago, about what he would be doing maybe to try to get the ball inside the three-point line. Over half his shots last year were three-point attempts, just slightly over 50%, but still over 50% of his shots from the field last year were three-point attempts. He only got to the foul line 35 times in 34 games. What we're seeing this year is a very different Kyle Guy, at least through the first two games. 6 of his 17 field goal attempts have been threes. He's got to the foul line 13 times already through two games. Scott, you missed the Friday night game with Greensboro, but what you've seen of Kyle Guy, do you kind of see what I'm seeing, that he's going to be more effective when he puts the ball on the floor and tries to get in the lane because now they can't cheat on him at the three-point line? I think that's going to make him a better offensive player.
For sure, and he looks more equipped to be able to do that. Seeing him last night in person, it's obvious this is a Kyle Guy 2.0. I mean, he's not that skinny little kid from Indiana that came to Virginia last year. He's bulked up. He looks like he's capable of holding his own out there on the floor, especially against ACC caliber teams. And I think he was very hesitant to do that last year. I don't see that being the case this year, and that's just going to make him that much more of an effective outside shooter as well.
So last night, the leading scorer we haven't talked about yet, we're already like three or four players into this discussion, was actually Devin Hall. And, I remarked this to you last night, Scott. We sit together at JPJ on Media Row. And I remarked at some point, I looked up and saw that at that point, I think Hall maybe had 15 points in the game. And I said, Scott, I had no idea he had that many points. They were so quiet. He just, it's not like, when Huff's in the game and he hits a couple threes, or when Kyle Guy, can explode in a stretch, you kind of notice that. But Hall just does things. He just fills the stats. He'll hit the three. And actually last night he was 6 of 9 from the floor, 6 of 6 from the line. Had 5 rebounds as well. This is what we're going to need from Devin Hall this year. He's going to fill the stat book up across the board, but you're really going to need him to be that guy that when you need a big basket, he can make it. And he's playing right now like the leader of this team, even though, again, all of our attention is on the Jay Huffs and the Kyle Guys and Ty Jeromes. Devin Hall is going to be a very important player for this team if it hopes to, play deep into March.
And I think that's the way he would prefer it. I mean, he's certainly the leader. He's been there for a long time. He's played with. He knows what it takes to be a leader. He's played with Joe Harris. He's played with Malcolm Brogdon. I mean, his pedigree is about as good as you can get. And with this year's chemistry, you don't have to have him score a bunch of points. I think a lot of times senior coming back redshirt like he is and being there for his fifth year, you would think that he would be all about getting the ball, getting the shots. But this is he's exactly opposite of that, and that's what we need out on the floor. He is a silent leader, and I don't think there's any doubt that the players know that. So there's going to be games he's not going to score 19 points, but there's going to be games he's going to be just as effective by being that on-the-floor captain, so to speak.
So we talked about, you know, not getting too excited. In fact, one of my first tweets last night from courtside was, don't get too excited. This Austin Peay team ranked in the KenPom power rankings 316 out of 351 nationally. But, you know, they'd only played one game going into last night. They played Vanderbilt and actually played them tough. That Vanderbilt game was actually a single-digit game. They actually played that game a four-quarter game, one of those experimental games. It actually was a single-digit game going into the fourth quarter of that game. Lost by 19 to a team that Virginia will actually play next week in New York. So Austin Peay, yeah, they're not an ACC team. They're not an upper echelon, even mid-major team. But, you know, don't dismiss it too much. And I thought I'd throw one thing other out, Scott. You know, we talked about the 93 part of the score last night. 49 for Austin Peay, 48 for UNC Greensboro. It's early, but through two games, the defense is looking like a Virginia defense. You know, we were probably all paying more attention to that the first number, the 93 number, as Virginia had 51 in the first half, etc. But the defense looked pretty solid again last night.
Yes, they did. Didn't give up easy baskets, and you know, the thing I liked about it is that game could have gotten sloppy early because it was certainly over early. I didn't see that. I didn't think the game got sloppy on either end, defensive end or the offensive end. They didn't give up a lot of easy baskets. They contested. Even, you know, he's playing 10 or 11 players and played some walk-on towards the end. You know, it could have easily gotten to a point where they just were giving up easy baskets to get the ball back. That's just not a trademark of Tony Bennett basketball, and it didn't happen last night. They played good, solid D right to the final buzzer.
So the Cavs next play on the road, first road game of the 2017-2018 season on Friday at VCU. And I know we're planning to be there in the Siegel Center help, you know, make sense of that one as well. It's a 4 o'clock tip, odd tip on a Friday afternoon, a 4 o'clock tip in Richmond. And, you know, this is a series. I like this series. Virginia and VCU played a two-game series back. It ended a couple years ago, back when Shaka Smart was still the coach at VCU. VCU won the game in Charlottesville. Virginia won the game in Richmond. And this is the first game back, I think. You know, we're playing this year in Richmond, next year coming back to Charlottesville. Love seeing these two teams match up. So that's Friday at 4 o'clock. And then next week, the Cavs will travel to New York for last night's game was technically part of the NIT season tip-off. The VCU game is not, but their two games next week will be part of that season tip-off. One of those weird things, how tournaments work. And Virginia plays Vanderbilt in the first game. I'm not sure what the second game is. A lot of us won't see the second game, I have to say, because we'll talk some football now. And first, before we talk about this week's game with Miami, the news is that the Black Friday game, we've known all season long, you know, since the schedule came out last spring, that the UVA-Virginia Tech game to end the season will be played on a Black Friday instead of Saturday, the Friday after Thanksgiving. Well, we got the time, and it's an 8 o'clock game. I'm not sure those of us who are attending the game are that happy about the 8 o'clock game, but, you know, from a fan standpoint, you know, it's a primetime game. First time in a long time that Virginia football is getting a primetime spot like this, very prominent spot alongside Virginia Tech with the long winning streak. So, yeah, we'll be there. It'll be cold. It'll be late. But now this weekend, can't overlook this weekend, obviously. As we're talking, Scott, we don't have the national, the college football playoff official rankings out quite yet. They're a few hours away. We're presuming Miami's number two. The undefeated Hurricanes, another huge win, 41-8 over Notre Dame last week after beating Virginia Tech 27-10 a couple weeks ago. And they have Virginia coming in this week, 19.5-point favorite are the Hurricanes, and nobody giving Virginia a chance this weekend. But, hey, I'm not saying there's a chance Virginia wins this game, but I think it's a chance Virginia can play with Miami for a while and make this interesting. What do you think, Scott?
Well, this is going to be a week that we are completely on the opposite ends of that. The line went up huge today. Went up from 17 yesterday to 20 today. So the money must be pouring in on Miami. But I just don't. You know, Miami's. I don't see a letdown. I think they. clearly know what the stakes are now. The bad thing with Miami, or the negative, is that they closed against Florida, I believe. Is that correct?
No, they actually closed with Pitt.
With Pitt. But they're going to be in that ACC championship game, so they're going to have to go head-to-head with Clemson. So, you know, they've got their work to do. I'm not sure, just given them, I guess, I don't know, what do you think? If they went 12-0 and then went to the ACC championship game and were beaten, would that knock them out of the final, the playoffs? Or I don't think it should, but it could. But I don't see them slipping up. Their front line, I mean, all those players, every one of those offensive linemen are probably going to be in NFL in the next year or two. I think it's going to be a long day for UVA. I hope that our offensive line can give Benkert some time, and he's not out there running for his life, because we've seen he doesn't do well when he's flushed out of the pocket. I'm not as hopeful as you. I'm thinking this is going to be over relatively early second quarter.
Here's the reason I'm laying out the case, and I'm trying to be positive here, and I think there is a case for positivity. One, I can't see any reason Miami doesn't have a letdown. The last 2 weeks, they've played huge games. When they played Virginia Tech was ranked 13th in the country, and actually Virginia Tech came in as a slight favorite on the road, at Miami, and then of course Miami blew them out. Last week, Miami had moved up from ninth itself. I think they were seventh going into that game with Notre Dame last week. Notre Dame, number three in the country, comes into Miami as a favorite. So two straight weeks, Miami, here they are undefeated, but, they're underdogs at home against ranked opponents, and they beat the heck out of both of them. Now, so you could say, oh, yeah, well, they're hitting their stride. Well, also, they got up for two straight games against really big opponents. Virginia, not a big opponent. Virginia is obviously a 6-4 team, 3-3 in the ACC. Now, let's look at who did Miami play before that Virginia Tech game. They played a North Carolina team that's now 2-8, and they had to win that game in the fourth quarter, had to put that game away in the fourth quarter. They've also had to win a game on a last-second field goal against a Georgia Tech team that Virginia happened to beat. That game was in Miami. And so, also beat a Florida State team 24-20 on a last-second, last-minute touchdown. And beat Syracuse 27-19. They tend to play up or down to their opposition. They played great against the two marquee opponents on their schedule. They've played mediocre against the bad teams on their the average or below average teams on their schedule, and so they're coming off this emotional roller coaster of this absolute high of beating the heck out of Notre Dame, and now they'll be after tonight they'll be number two in the college football playoff rankings. I'm not saying they're going to be flat the whole game on Saturday. It's a 12:00 kickoff, in Miami, where now the fans have been out the last 2 weeks, but are they going to be out for Virginia on Saturday? I doubt there's going to be more than half the stadium with people in seats. And so it's going to be a lackluster crowd, a terrible environment to play football in. And if they come out flat in the first quarter, end of the second quarter, I'm not saying Virginia jumps on them, but Virginia can hang in the game. If you let an opponent like Virginia hang with you, things can happen. So I'm just saying there's a chance from a game theory standpoint that Virginia can keep this game into the second half. And if you're playing in the second half with anybody, who knows? This Miami team has played down to opponents of late this year. So there's a chance. I'm not saying Virginia wins the game, but I think there's a chance.
Well, I mean, yeah, certainly there's a chance, but I don't put a lot of stock into the score, looking at the scores, because there is such a thing as a team actually getting better as the season progresses, and I think there's no doubt that Miami is a much better, much more complete football team as we speak than they were back when they played Georgia Tech, and I think for Virginia to make this a competitive game, Miami's going to have to play really, really poor, and I just don't see Miami They may not play as well as they did against Notre Dame, because certainly Virginia's not going to come out there with the weapons. They're not going to come out there on the field with the same intensity that they would have if they were playing Notre Dame. But the crowd, you're right, the crowd's probably not going to be there, although it may be a lot better than what you would expect, because they are going to be the number two ranked team in the nation this year. So that's going to still create some buzz down in South Florida. But I still not buying into Virginia making. I hope so. I hope they make it. Hope they win. But I'm just not convinced that they are going to be at all competitive in this game.
Oh, and so this is what makes for good podcast, for good radio. The reason I'm gonna double down on it. I mean, I really think, and this Miami team has played well the last 2 weeks, and everybody's, they're not certainly. I mean, the last 2 weeks they were underdogs at home. It's the same team that also 3 weeks ago barely beat North Carolina, a horrible team. That Virginia also played evenly with. Also, to be fair to both sides there. Virginia's coming in. We talked about Miami, at least. I talked about how Miami may come in flat. Virginia is still playing with house money here. I mean, they didn't play well against Louisville last week, to say the least. It was 17-14 at halftime. Virginia was down. Really never got into the game after halftime. I didn't get to really follow that game as closely. I was doing my last VMI football broadcast, and so I caught the third quarter on the radio. Fourth quarter, I got to watch a little bit on TV. By that point, the game was already over. Obviously, Virginia offensively struggled for the second or third time in recent weeks. The Boston College game, when they could barely get to 250 yards against Boston College, a team that had given up a lot of yards all season long, and then this Louisville team also gives up a lot of yards, gave up less than 300 to Virginia this past week. That's a little frustrating if you're a Virginia fan to see, but. I still will say, Virginia's got firepower enough. If Miami comes out flat, I'll put it that way. If Miami comes out flat, Kurt Binkert leads the ACC in touchdown passes with 21. Virginia can put some points on the board. And here's the biggest key. And I don't know that Virginia can do this, but if Virginia can avoid Miami's coaches giving out that silly turnover chain, if Miami's second in the country in turnover margin, plus 17 through 9 games, almost two more turnovers every game than their opponents. That's obviously a key. If you can create that many more turnovers a game than your opponents, you're going to win every game, and that's why Miami is 9-0 right now. Virginia can avoid the turnovers, maybe create a turnover or two. And we saw Malik Rozier in the Virginia Tech game. He actually threw 3 interceptions in that game. Virginia Tech didn't do anything with those interceptions. But if Virginia can force some turnovers, avoid the turnovers themselves, they can at least hang around, and that's all I'm expecting. I think that's maybe all Virginia fans can hope for, is hang around, kind of like Carolina did, kind of like Georgia Tech did, kind of like Syracuse did, and then if one play goes your way, you can win the game. I wouldn't bet money on Virginia winning this game, but I will tell you that I don't think it's going to be a 19.5 point or 20 point or whatever game that the odds makers are saying. I think it's going to be a lot tighter game when they play on Saturday, for all the reasons I kind of stated there.
Chris, I read an interesting article this week out of a Miami newspaper. I'm not sure it was the Miami paper or the Fort Lauderdale, but it said that Miami is still the only – they don't need any extra incentive. They're not overlooked. They would never overlook Virginia, because they still haven't forgotten that Virginia – closed out the Orange Bowl with a 48-0 victory over Miami, and was still throwing the ball late into the fourth quarter with a 41-0 lead.
Now, who
the alumni will never ever let a current Miami football team forget that.
The alumni would not, but that was in 2007. In 2007, the players on these current teams were in elementary school. Neither of the coaching staffs were at their current school. In fact, Mark Richt was about 3 years into his job at Georgia. Bronco Mendenhall was maybe a second-year coach at BYU. That's something that's good for writers to talk about. That's not something these kids care about. I mean, but when the ball is kicked up in the air, that's a good point. But it's 10 years. If it was 2 years ago, I'll tell you this, last week I had not seen, did you get to see the Catholics versus Convicts ESPN 30 for 30 they did a couple years ago?
I did.
I didn't watch it until Friday of last week. You know, I was looking forward to that Notre Dame-Miami game. Of course, it turned into a dud because Miami dominated them early and often. But I'd never seen that documentary. And so watched it, and it was, if you're listening out there, you haven't seen it, it's worth watching, even if you don't care about Miami or Notre Dame. It's a great documentary. And that game, you know, so the Catholics versus Convicts game, which Notre Dame won 31-30, you know, it was revenge game, 1988, you know, the two teams, and it ended up that Notre Dame finished 12-0 and Miami finished 11-1. Notre Dame finished first and Miami finished second in the polls. This is before the playoffs. You know, and they were separated by 1 point, and actually Miami had a 2-point conversion play to win the game. So, I mean, that's how close those two teams were. But the seeds of that game, for those who may not remember the story, may remember details, were planted 3 years prior to that, 1985, when Notre Dame was down. Jerry Faust had just quit, but he was coaching his final game for Notre Dame against Miami as a lame duck coach. And Jimmy Johnson ran the score up. I mean, he had a 58-7 final score. He was throwing the ball in the fourth quarter. He had a punt block on in the fourth quarter. I mean, they did all this stuff. And the Notre Dame kids who played in that game 3 years later use it as motivation. They played in that game and they use it as motivation. 10 years ago, I'm not so sure. I mean, it's a story for us to talk about as writers and fans and that kind of thing. I'm not so sure, but
the article did say that that the Miami football alumni would never let the current roster forget that, and it went on to say that it is very typical that on any given Miami home game, the university tries to. This culture of their alumni keeping them close, which I have a lot of respect for, that they often have as many as 100 alumni on the field for every home game. And you can see them as some of the illustrious alumni of Miami, Ed Reed, you know, a lot of the Miami players that went on to have Hall of Fame NFL careers, Ray Lewis. They're there. They're there almost every game. So I think that was the point, is that those guys that maybe didn't play in that game but that knew about that game aren't going to let them forget that Virginia closed out the history of the Orange Bowl with a 48-0 butt-kicking and was throwing on them in the fourth quarter. So, hey, thanks, Al Grove.
Well, I'd say thanks, Al Grove, because that was a great way to close the Orange Bowl. And there were a lot of those guys on the sidelines that day, too. And they weren't very happy, and they weren't happy because they were getting their team was getting their butts handed to them. And they don't play in this game. Neither do Chris Long, unfortunately for us, because Chris Long was part of that 48-0 win. I'm trying to think who else might have been in that game. Jamil Sewell was a quarterback. That's the most embarrassing thing part of that, I'm sure, for Miami, is that they lost 48-0 to Jamil Sewell as quarterback. But you know, if it takes that to get Miami to wake up, then I think Miami's got bigger problems as far as their future football this season going on. But it should be interesting. It's a 12:00 kickoff. We'll be live blogging during the game. Depending on how it goes, you know, sometimes Scott and I get down in the dumps after a big loss. We won't do a podcast. So you know, our emotions play into this too. If Miami closes out this,
we're not. Afraid to admit
that. Yeah, we're not afraid to admit that. You know, if Miami turns the table and wins this game 48-0, you probably won't hear from us. You'll read some stuff, but you won't hear from us on Saturday. But we may do a podcast on Saturday after the game.
If Virginia does win that game, we'll probably do a 6-hour podcast.
Yeah, 6-hour podcast. We'll probably, before the podcast, I think I will go out and buy some turnover chains. And you know, be wearing them. You won't see them on the podcast, but you know, you might actually just hear me clinking my chains a little bit. So it can go from either extreme. It can go from down in the dumps to this will be like, you know, Virginia will become a northern Havana for a couple hours. But yeah, either way, we'll be live blogging during the game. We'll have something after the game, a recap, some columns, maybe a celebratory podcast. We'll see. But certainly also Friday, you know, kind of signaling ahead, the VCU basketball game next week. Of course, the UVA basketball team in New York, and then Virginia Tech on Friday. We got a lot to talk about there too. So, you know, lots to look forward to. We hope as far as things go the next few days. I'm going to go ahead and sign off for now. Scott and I will talk a little bit later this week as we get closer to game day and give our kind of our last thoughts on things too. But for Scott German, I'm Chris Graham signing off for Augusta Free Press here on Street Knowledge. Have a great day.